We are Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. We've got a lot of local stories to cover, including a report on the big meeting in Hurleyville last night. There's about 400 folks that came out to talk about Fallsburg's proposed zoning changes, and things got heated. Patricio Rubio was on the scene. That story's coming up in just a minute. Plus, more about Sullivan County's high electric bills, and more about a certain set of risky stairs in Honesdale, and Tustin Social helping local teens learn to cook at the Blue Fox. Those stories and more from Ruby Rayner of the River Reporter in the second half of the program. First, let's start tonight talking about the impact that some of what President Trump talked about last night may have on New York. One of the things he told Congress is that they should get rid of the CHIPS and Science Act. And if Republicans in the House do repeal that act, key technology investments across New York State could be in jeopardy. Jun Yun Han has more.
Trump's comments during his address to a joint session of Congress Tuesday night were his strongest critique yet of President Biden's landmark legislation.
Your CHIPS Act is a horrible, horrible thing. We give hundreds of billions of dollars, and it doesn't mean a thing. They take our money and they don't spend it.
The CHIPS Act incentivizes technological research and semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. as a way to reduce America's reliance on other countries like China. In a statement on X, formerly known as Twitter, Governor Kathy Hochul said repealing CHIPS would risk 50,000 jobs and $100 billion worth of investments in central New York. According to Hochul's office, New York has the largest financial commitments from the CHIPS Act of all states. That's mostly through Micron, which is a semiconductor manufacturing company that's expanding its operations outside of Syracuse. The CHIPS Act was made through a bipartisan partnership between Republican Senator Todd Young from Indiana and New York Senator Chuck Schumer. Schumer spoke about Trump's comments on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
He said he wants to cut it. I don't even know why he wants to cut it.
Other projects in New York could be in jeopardy if CHIPS is repealed. That includes GlobalFoundries' plan for a $2 billion factory in Saratoga County and an I-90 hub spanning Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you, Jung Yoon. Next up, we have our report on the big meeting last night at Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, where nearly 400 residents showed up to weigh in on Fallsburg's proposed zoning amendments. And the debate was heated at times. Supporters argued that the changes will align local laws and federal regulations. Critics warn of unchecked development and infrastructure strain. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio was there and has this report.
Nearly 400 people crowded into the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center on March 4th. As the Fallsburg Town Board held its third public hearing on a very controversial zoning law amendment.
So before we open up the public hearing, I'd just like to give a statement describing what these zoning changes actually are. We are here today to hold a hearing on a series of proposed zoning amendments prepared in response to citizen feedback and particularly threats of litigation the town had received. In at least one such correspondence, the litigating attorneys requested several changes to the zoning law that would comport with the Federal Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, also known as RLUIPA.
That's Michael Bensimon, Fallsburg Town Supervisor, explaining the reasoning behind the proposed zoning amendments. RLUIPA, also known as the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, was passed by Congress in 2000 and prevents zoning laws from unfairly restricting religious institutions.
Certain modifications were made to the definition section to clarify vagueness in the descriptions of accessory structure, building height, building coverage, bungalow colony, lot area, retreat, and to add definitions for religious use, religious retreat, and density. These clarifications in the language do not allow or prohibit anything, but merely seek to remove any doubts as to their meaning. Number two, amendments to bulk requirements were made to reduce setbacks for houses of worship, which includes the definitions of religious use, religious camp, and religious school, to the least constraining in each zoning district to meet our LUPA purposes. For example, we have heard from concerned residents that these proposed changes will allow houses of worship in an agricultural district. To be clear, houses of worship in an ag district are currently allowed in our zoning code, even without these proposed changes, and is also included in the current comprehensive plan. A house of worship and an agricultural farming operation both require at least 10 acres of land to operate. However, a farm requires a front yard setback of 75 feet. That is the only change being proposed to the Ag District, 100 feet to 75 feet from the road.
Another key proposal expands commercial uses in industrial zones to attract business while preventing the spread of high pollution industries. According to the town, the goal is to provide local employees with easier access to retail, restaurants, and essential services, making the area more appealing for businesses and workers alike.
The next set of amendments grants the planning board discretion during site plan review to 1, consider mitigations for development of religious uses that are consistent with SEAKER, the comprehensive plan, and zoning law, and 2, to approve extensions of site plan approval for 2 6-month periods based on a new definition of vested rights for site plan approval governed by established case law in New York State. These amendments are not intended to increase the number of dwelling units in the town. Furthermore, amendments of non-conforming uses ensure the same standard is used for all non-conforming uses with regard to expansion and compliance. This is especially true of seasonal housing, which was identified in the comprehensive plan as a benefit to the town, with several associated detriments that include impacts to traffic, water, and sewer. We are proposing to allow an old 500 square foot bungalow to remodel up to 750 square feet. New bungalows and bungalow colonies are still banned in our zoning, and these proposed changes would not result in the creation of any new bungalows or other non-conforming housing units. In total, these amendments will tighten zoning protections, guard against appeals, lawsuits, and subsequent taxpayer-funded cash settlements, especially with regard to religious uses, and encourage commercial development in the industrial zoning district.
However, some residents fear that changes could lead to overdevelopment. Pam Wagner, a longtime Fallsburg resident and advocate for reasonable development, expressed concerns about how these changes could reshape the town's rural character.
Protecting our zoning laws is not an act of discrimination. It is a commitment to responsible planning and fair land use policies. If approved, these changes would permanently alter Fallsburg's rural landscape and contradict the goals of the 2018 Town Comprehensive Plan.
Another voice raising concerns at the Fallsburg public hearing was Denise Sullivan, a longtime resident and community advocate. She expressed serious reservations about how the proposed zoning amendments could affect local infrastructure, property values, and the town's character.
Why is the town board even entertaining the expansion of high-density housing areas when firefighting and sewer problems are now annual occurrences throughout the town? These zoning amendments will allow for increased density of houses that will continue to tax our crumbling infrastructure and encourage overdevelopment.
Attorney William Denhurst, who has previously worked on zoning matters in Fallsburg, spoke out strongly against the proposed amendments. He warned that the changes could have unintended consequences for the town's long-term development.
The primary concern I want to raise right now with the board is concerns about ambiguity, contradictions, inconsistencies in the current draft. The County 239 raised some of these very same concerns. Ambiguities in a zoning code are problematic because ambiguities weigh against the municipality. So whatever the goal, the plan, the purpose of the zoning amendments is, if they're ambiguous, if they're contradictory, if they're inconsistent, a court can say, so what? We don't care about that because that's not what you wrote, and we weigh it in favor of the property owner. So these amendments have numerous areas of inconsistency, ambiguity. One of the big areas is the house of worship and religious uses. Why are these being treated the way they are? It's unclear
The Sullivan County Division of Planning conducted a 239 review, which found inconsistencies in the town's zoning code and recommended against the zoning amendments. According to the review, years of piecemeal zoning edits have created inconsistencies, and they strongly recommend updating the comprehensive plan before making the changes. The county's review also raised several red flags, including increased density, potential RUPLA violations, and the strain on local water and sewer systems. Something the residents echoed in their concerns. Here's Gabriella Nolan from Fallsburg, who has concerns on the environmental impact if these zoning laws will go into effect.
You missed some parts to correctly evaluate the environmental impacts that may have within these amendments. As many have already stated, environmental impacts are very important. Environmental impacts not only affect the way that we live, but the wildlife around us.
Moses Friedman, a resident of Fallsburg, was in favor of the zoning changes. He talked about the potential impact on religious communities, housing availability, and the fairness of the proposed changes.
And with this, I do understand some people have issues with water and etc. Actually, I know of a property that just been developed next to my place, and our wells are in good shape because we take care of them. You properly maintain it. I appreciate those in the back. I don't think on the other side anybody ever boots yet. And we would like to, I think this place is a peaceful place.
Attorney Stephen Barshoff, who has represented clients challenging the municipal zoning laws, made it clear that legal action could be on the horizon if the town does not proceed carefully. He warned that the amendments were not just necessary, but legally unavoidable.
I don't want to sue you. I don't want to bring an Arlupa case. I don't want to see you in court like the town of Highland is now, who I had to sue. And the federal judge just the other day said that you do the same thing, there's an Arlupa claim. Now, I don't want to do that to Fallsburg. So what Fallsburg did was Fallsburg amended its zoning, the proposed amendments to its zoning code in order to match what the law requires. And that's what the definitions are designed to address. Now, I'll take a look at the language that's in those definitions, and if there's some ambiguity, if there's some problem, I would love to see the town board address it because it should be done properly. So yes, the town board should hold open this public hearing, allow written comments to be submitted. I want to address the 239 review, which I believe on Arlupa is fundamentally flawed. This is written by a planner, not by a lawyer, someone who does not understand Arlupa and does not understand how these things work.
For now, the public hearing remains open for written comments for the next 30 days, which will give residents and experts more time to weigh in. Fallsburg said they will review all the comments, including the county's 239 findings, before making a final decision. In Hurleyville, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. If you want any more detail, more information on that story, the entire meeting is up on our Facebook page. You can watch it there. We streamed it live yesterday. Look for Radio Catskill on Facebook. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the latest news from the River Reporter. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Mostly it was a celebration of Trump, and it was a celebration of his last 40-some-odd days in office, and it was a celebration of all the things that he campaigned on in 2024. But what that translates to for the rest of a presidency, let alone the rest of this year, was not answered in this speech.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is iconic alt-country musician Nico Case. The founding member of the indie rock band The New Pornographers is out with a memoir. It's called The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You. She'll talk about it with Hanif Abdurraqib. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Well, every Thursday on The Local Edition, we get the latest news from The River Reporter. And for that, I turned to Ruby Rayner of The River Reporter. And I spoke to Ruby earlier this afternoon. Ruby, welcome back to the Local Edition.
It's good to be back. Thanks.
So, Ruby, as I understand it, you were at the NYSEG meeting. Representatives from NYSEG officials came out basically to meet Sullivan County residents face-to-face to talk about their electric bills, right?
Yep.
What did you see? I was wondering, you know, what your take was and what people, you know, had to say and how did it all go down?
I guess the first thing that I saw is just the volume of people. I most weeks attend the legislature, which happened at this same time that this took place typically. And there was like, you know, 400-600% more people there than there typically ever is. So to me, the fact that so many people, you know, during workday hours, you know, took the time to come because they felt that this was issue enough to seek help and wanted to take advantage of this opportunity indicates that it's a problem that is affecting people and that people feel like they need help.
I heard people are angry about this, but we did like run a spot, and the people, while they sounded frustrated, they didn't sound quite as angry as I was thinking. So what were you hearing from the people?
I feel like people were more like confused, and they, you know, you're sitting in front of someone, they had customer service representatives from NYSEG who are, you know, walking them through and looking at stuff. But the fact of the matter is, even if they explain X, Y, and Z, people feel like they can't afford the bills that they're getting and that they're far greater than what they were very recently. You know, people are talking about bills that have doubled and tripled, you know, over the course of a month. So that's a huge difference. And not that maybe they were necessarily angry, but that they're kind of concerned and worried about how they're going to pay for these bills. There was one person who I spoke to who was saying that their bill, you know, is just like much higher than their rent, and they aren't equipped to financially be able to shoulder that cost. And so, but a lot of these people also don't qualify for assistance programs like HEAP. They're, you know, earning an income, and their income isn't at the low enough to qualify for HEAP yet, right? This is their biggest, their NYSEG bill, their energy bill is their biggest expense.
Right. Now, and this meeting that we're talking about, this was last Thursday, right?
Yes, correct.
Which is, you know, and it happened there in the space where the legislature would usually meet. That's why you can kind of compare crowd size between a regular session and what this was there. But I'm bringing that up just because the last time that you and I talked about this was the night before this meeting. And I remember I was surprised when you told me that one of NYSEG's primary explanations here was basically, hey, we don't set the rates for the power. Like, you know, we don't say how much electricity costs. We just give you the bill for what it costs us to deliver it to you. And I remember, I was surprised about that. And then, you know, I shouldn't have been, because I should know that, you know, NYSEG isn't necessarily a power generator. It's still kind of counterintuitive for folks. And I know that's part of what people were getting their head around last Thursday. You also looked into what's up with people's meters. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you learned there?
Yeah, there, you know, to what you first said, there's so many parts of this that I don't think are just easily understood or commonly known about energy bills. And that is part of it, right? That NYSEG is just, they charge delivery costs. They deliver the energy, but they are not the provider or the supplier, right, of the energy. And those are different companies, which are also listed on people's bills. And you can look, it's on the third page, and there's a list on NYSEG's website of all of the different potential, you know, suppliers, and you can see which one you have. But there was this one, I thought, point that was, I didn't previously had heard about or know about the meters. And there's been a couple of different folks in person who were asking about whether their smart meter affected this and online. And the answer from NYSEG is no, having a smart meter doesn't affect that or not. but there is different types of meters in the way that they read your energy usage. So there's a straight read meter, which reads your usage just as a straight one. There's one cost and it reads it all the same all day. And then there's something called a day night meter. So it has, it reads your meter differently based on whether it's the day or the night, and has different costs associated with the day or the night reading that have different service rates. And so a lot of times if you're, you know, in a rental or something like that, you don't even know necessarily whether you have a straight meter or a day-night reader. And the important distinction between those that the NYSEG regional manager, Thomas Garrity, was explaining to one customer is that NYSEG is allowed to hedge the service rates for the straight readers, but because of regulations, they aren't able to do that for the day-night meters. So day-night meters are a lot more susceptible to fluctuations from supply and demand. And so Garrity was explaining that people who have experienced maybe the biggest difference in their bills that he notices is folks who have 100% electric, because your usage typically goes up in the winter. And then you also have a day-night meter, which is probably going to be more susceptible to price increases based on supply and demand.
And when you say 100% electric, you mean people who are also heating their homes with electric?
Exactly.
Right, yes. Okay. I'm just going to let the listener know here that we're going to stay on top of the story because people are still reacting to these bills, and Patricio is working on a couple of interviews that we will be able to bring to people next week. So we will stay on this on our end, and you'll probably stay on this on your end too, Ruby. You know, next up, I know you've got a story about young people learning how to cook, and it's happening over at the Blue Fox. Let me know what this is about.
Yeah, so there's a new after-school teen club program that's free of cost being offered through the nonprofit Tustin Social. And they just entered their second week of kind of the first session of the program, which is cooking. It's called the Cocina Italian Culinary Exploration, and it's at the Blue Fox. And it's with the chef there, Bruno, who is teaching the tweens and teens different culinary cooking skills for this after-school program. And I went and I took some photos and I talked with all of them, and they were learning to make bread and seemed to be having a very, very fun time. And it is part of this kind of new community program that's aimed at trying to fill this gap that was found to be existing in arts programming specifically for teens in the county. And it's really quite remarkable that it's also free and free of cost to kind of open that up and not let that be a barrier for kids to participate.
And Tustin Social is the organization that spearheaded this?
Yeah, so it's a new program from Tustin Social, and there'll be three different sessions, and this is the first of those three sessions, which is going to run until, let me pull up the month, the exact month that it's going to run to. It's six different sessions until March 26th, yes. And then the next session is an art and design session, which is going to work on helping the teens create and learn about mixed media and different approaches to creating art. And that session is from April 2nd to May 14th. And then the last session is a zine workshop, or zine. People say it differently. And that one then also culminates in the teens being able to present designs that they've worked on throughout that program at the Deepwater Literary Festival. So that's that third session, which is from May 21st to June 28th.
And are most of those sessions happening? Tustin Social's community space is called the Commons. Is that where they're doing a lot of these?
Yeah, so they have that new space, which is in Narrowsburg, at the shops at Narrowsburg on Main Street.
Yeah.
And So those will be hosted there. And the cooking one is actually right at the, in the barn that's across the street from the Blue Fox. And the buses from Sullivan West can drop the kids off there. So that's another added kind of way to, you know, have easy transportation for the students who want to attend.
Great. And more information about social Tustin Social is up to is at TustinSocial.org. Ruby, I think it's been a little while since we've had some news from Honesdale. Can you let me know what's going on in Honesdale? I've seen a picture of some precarious-looking steps in Honesdale. What's this about?
Yeah, there are, and that's why the Honesdale Borough Council is considering what the potential future and options for those steps that you're referring to, which are called the Cliff Street Steps in Honesdale, which are in need of some repairs if they're going to be kept. And a lot of residents have brought up that these stairs serve as a real connector and a pathway from Cliff Street and Cottage Avenue to downtown Honesdale and then to an access at the Lackawaxen River. So a lot of residents have spoken up about their want and their desire for these steps to be repaired and not gotten rid of, and that if it was, if they no longer existed, that it would really cut off access for a lot of people to downtown and the rest of the community. A lot of people talked about how, you know, they use this with their kids and their grandchildren to walk around and to access these different points of, you know, where there's more stores and the river. So that was pointed out by residents at the Honesdale Borough Council meeting as they were discussing what the future options of these steps would be. And then from the Borough Council themselves, there was mixed support expressed on whether to kind of invest in the repairs or and keep the steps or to get rid of them. And the Honesdale mayor characterized it as a question of whether the borough should, you know, invest in walkable infrastructure, and pointed out how having that walkable infrastructure right now is really pretty unique for the area. So that's kind of what's been discussed about the Cliff Street steps. And it seems like there are a bunch of folks who want to keep and repair those steps because they think that it provides value and they don't want to get rid of that.
And while we're on the topic of Honesdale, before we go, we got about 30 seconds here. Quick, can you tell me about, you say there's a vacancy for a counselor in Honesdale. What is this position and who vacated it?
Yes. So for the Honesdale Borough, there is an opening on the Honesdale Borough Council after Noelle Mundy resigned from her position. She is moving out of the borough, so that is the reason for her resignation. But now, you know, the council is seeking and accepting applications for a new borough counselor. So they are requesting letters of application to be received before March 19th so that they're able to vote and fill that vacancy.
Okay, March 19th, that's the Monday after next. So you got about a week and a half to apply if you're interested in being a counselor in Honesdale. I would suggest that living in the Honesdale borough is probably a good idea if you're going to apply. But Ruby,
yes.
The latest news from the River Reporter, all these stories are up now at riverreporter.com, and I thank you so much for bringing them to us today.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, that's going to do it for the local edition tonight. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. I'll be back again tomorrow night. What day is it? Oh, it's Wednesday. Coming up at 7, we've got great music. 2 hours from the Retro Cocktail Hour. 2 hours from Upfront Soul. But we've got more news before that. The Daily is coming up next. But real quick before we go, the weather. Flood warning goes in effect from late tonight to tomorrow evening for the West Branch of the Delaware River at Walton. That's Walton, New York. A very specific flood warning. Minor flooding is forecast with the river expected to rise above flood stage late tonight to a crest of 9.8 feet tomorrow morning. It will then fall below flood stage tomorrow afternoon. Tonight, we got periods of rain, heavy at times from 9 p.m. On and off scattered showers continue overnight. Rainfall totals half an inch to an inch and a quarter are possible by sunrise tomorrow. And tomorrow to be cloudy with a high of 4.